Okay, so we will start. So today, as we say, for Rachel, for Vichna Bas Yirmiyahu, and we were in the middle last week, and we're just in the middle of this drama, if you want to say, because I know we're going into it in very much depth, but today we will still do a little bit more detail, and then next week we'll continue. But today, because up until now we saw how they were really rebelling, so to speak, that's how we define them, as actually rebelling. And it wasn't just that they were worried, that was one thing, they were worried, there was anxiety, they were afraid, but it was a lot deeper than that. It was a point where they actually didn't trust that Hashem would be able to take them into the land of Israel. So it was considered an act of outright rebellion against Hashem. On some levels, they perhaps didn't want that life, the life that Israel would offer. So at the point that we were up to was where they were still literally like crying and screaming and, you know what I mean, and really acting very, very rebellious. And Yehoshua, and actually more in the Pesukim, it's clear that Kalev got up and tried to stop them. And the last pasuk that we read last week in depth, we saw how they got so angry at Kalev that they wanted to stone him. That's what we said. They were so angry. It's not so clear in the pasuk. I'll show you. Let's start. It's pasuk. So there's two booklets. The one that had the Pesukim, it's in pasuk. Let me just see where it is. I think it's pasuk Yud Aleph on page 160, maybe page 160. If you look where you see where it says, I'll tell you what I want to start actually, sorry. We'll just reread from Pasuk Test, page 159. So they say, right, so Kalev is telling them, of course Hashem could bring us into the land. If he chooses to, there's no reason why he shouldn't. So therefore, nobody else, maybe they don't know what's on. Okay, maybe we can close that soon then. Okay, so he says like this, that im chafetz banu Hashem, in Pasuk Ches, if Hashem wants to, likes us, wants us, v'hevi yisanu el ha'aretz hazais, and he will bring us into this land, unisana lanu, and he will give us eretz asher, hizavas chalav advash, this land which is land flowing with milk and honey. But he begs them, ach b'Hashem al timroidu, do not rebel. That's where you can see that word rebel against Hashem. V'atem al tira'u es am ha'aretz, and don't be afraid of the people of the land. As we said last week, ki lachmeinu hem, we mentioned why he uses that word bread. They're going to dissolve in our mouths. You know, we'll be able to eat them up. Why are you afraid? And then the next three words, I just want to stop on them for a second. Sar tzilam me'alehem, their protection has departed from them. V'Hashem itanu, and Hashem is with us. Al tiro'im, don't be afraid. Now we mentioned when it says their protection, and we mentioned this, that they had a tzaddik, that's who offers protection. And the one tzaddik who lived in the land, we say maybe was Eiv, and Eiv died. And because Eiv died, they said, what are you worried about? There's absolutely nothing for them to hold on to. There's no merit that they have that they should be saved. So you really have nothing to be afraid of. The reason why I mention this is because very interesting. This week, last week's parsha in Noach that we just read this Shabbos, we had a very interesting concept in the parsha, the concept of Daisy was on Shabbos, the rainbow. So we talk about the rainbow. We know that when Hashem wants to destroy the world, he said, I won't destroy the world. Rather, I'll bring a rainbow, and that will be a sign that, whether it be a sign for Hashem or a sign for us, that we should do tshuva, that Hashem really wants to destroy the world. The only reason he's not doing it is because he promised he won't bring another flood. So the commentaries, the Kli Yakar specifically says something very beautiful, and he quotes these words. And he says, what does it mean? We know this, a famous thing, that in the times of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, there was no rainbow because he was such a great tzaddik. And obviously what that implies is that Hashem didn't have any thought of destroying the world during the time of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, so he had no need to bring a rainbow. But we know that a rainbow is a natural phenomenon. It happens when it rains, and then the sun, you know, shines through. So what does it mean there was no rainbow? So the Kli Yakar says a magnificent thing. He says like this, when there is a tzaddik like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai that lives in your time, righteous people, what happens with the people that are around them is that not only do they model their behavior, hopefully, on the tzaddik, but they also look to the righteous person as a protection, meaning that they have this sense of security that because there is a righteous person in the town, they or in the world, so to speak, at that time alive, they feel that Hashem's punishment will not be so harsh on the world. in the merit of that righteous person. Therefore, the Kliyakar says, when you know that there's a righteous person that lives, that's alive, you don't look up to find a rainbow. Because where do you look? You look rather at the tzaddik. The rainbow is a reassurance. Hashem's not going to destroy the world. But when there's a tzaddik there, you don't need that reassurance. So he says, the Kliyakar says, people are not searching for rainbows when a tzaddik is alive. But when a tzaddik is gone, v'sar tzila me'aleim, their protection is removed, then people start to look up and say, oh my gosh, maybe we'll be destroyed. So they look up for the rainbow, which reassures them that even if Hashem wants to destroy them, He won't, because He promised. So it's a very fascinating idea, and we saw something else very beautiful, and it's a side thing, very interesting, about the same idea that it's other Mefarshim explain also beautifully, that when there is a tzaddik that is alive and protects the people, so what happens? What does it mean there's no rainbow? Another very cute explanation, just fascinating. If it's, as we say, a natural phenomena, because the Rama says, perhaps what could happen then is that it rains when it's supposed to rain. And we know, what does the Torah say? When is the ideal time for rain? Exactly. It says Friday night and then maybe one other night in the week, but not during the day. If it rains at night, there's no rainbow. The rainbow is when it rains during the day, because you need the sunlight. So in the time of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the people, in his merit, were so worthy, and he was so worthy, that it only rained when it was supposed to rain. And therefore, there was no rainbow. So that's another way to understand what that means. But as we say, from our context, a very beautiful idea, but from our context, we see this idea that there is a concept where people do feel secure, even though they're not really worthy, based on somebody else's worthiness. And we tend to look up, and that's also a good thing, that at least the idea being that we should learn from them, at least, not just leave it to them and say, well, we could do what we like because somebody good is alive and therefore we can go on and do everything wrong. Obviously not. What we know is that when there is a righteous person, their goodness, so to speak, affects everybody else as well and lifts everybody else as well. Okay, so there is, yeah, you know, Sylvia, I think that sometimes we do have to rely on that because we're not aware of a revealed tzaddik, so there is a concept of 36. Yeah.
What you just said, that person is a tzaddik.
A
tzaddik. General sort of concept.
I know. So, yeah, but it could be, but like you say, there's always, we always believe that there are special righteous people and do offer us that protection. But it's nice when you can identify, because then you can learn from them. And that's the advantage when there's a revealed tzaddik living, but 100%. Okay, so then we come, as we said, so now that's what he's trying to talk them. So as we can see over here, Kalev is trying to tell the people, what are you afraid of? They have no protection. There's nobody in whose merit Hashem is going to protect them. So then, Vayoimru, so what's their reaction in Pasuk Yud on page 160? Vayoimru kol ha'eda, lirgoim ayisam ba'avan, right? So the entire assembly said, pelt them with stones. And then what happens? So then the glory of Hashem, the cloud, so to speak, of protection came from the oil. Mayed el kol b'nei Yisrael. It appeared to all of the children of Israel. Everybody saw it. The question is, whom did they want to pelt? Was it Kalev and Yahushua? Or maybe even worse? Exactly, Moshe and Aaron. Maybe they wanted to, because remember, a few psukim ago we read last week, they said, let us appoint a new head, a head who will take us back to Egypt. So maybe they want to get rid of Moshe and Aaron so they can appoint a new head who will take them back to Egypt. So let's see what Rashi tells us. So Rashi says, Lirgam Aysam, Es Yahushua v'Kalev, them refers to Yahushua and Kalev. But look on the bottom. On the bottom of the article, they bring some commentaries of Rashi, and it says the verse does not mean that Yahushua and Kalev succeeded in winning over the people to the point that they wanted to stone the spies. He says, alternatively, Rashi points out that the word them does not refer to Moshe and Aaron. Let's see what he says. Had the people wished to stone Moshe and Aaron, they would have said so in their initial complaint before Yahushua and Kalev began speaking. That's one opinion. That's the opinion of the Maharal in his Perush, which is called the Gur Aryeh. But there's another way, interesting, it says there's a different version that is brought, that there's a Medrash Agada that says that it was Moshe and Aaron. To stone them refers to Moshe and Aaron. And that's why when it says afterwards that the glory of Hashem appeared, it teaches us that they were throwing stones, but the cloud of Hashem protected Moshe. So the stone didn't hit them. So you see, there's two ways of looking at it, but they definitely wanted to destroy, whether it be the messengers or the ones who sent them to begin with, you know, Moshe himself, but they were really angry. And here we come to a point that Hashem is finished. As we say, that's it. Hashem has had enough. And that's what we will see today in depth. How does Hashem react to the way these people are acting? So we all know the end of the story. The end of the story with the Meraglim is that they don't go into the land of Israel, and they die slowly over 40 years. But what does Hashem initially want to do with these Meraglim, with all, not only the Meraglim, but the people who listened and allowed themselves to be convinced by the Meraglim? So let's see now. Now we'll see in depth the next few psukim. So now, what does Hashem say to Moshe in Pasuk Yud Aleph? Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. So Hashem says to Moshe, Ad ono yinatsuni ha'om hazeh. Until what point will this people anger me? Va'ad ono lo yaminu bi. And until which point will they not believe in me? B'chol ha'oisais asher asisi, despite all the signs that I have performed, b'kirbay in its midst. And because of that, Hashem's like, it's like a parent that says, enough, enough is enough. How much could I take? I've reached boiling point, it's too much. They've rebelled. So what does Hashem say to Moshe? What am I going to do? Akenu badever. I will smite them with the plague. Which means, I'm getting rid of all of them, immediately, right now, in 1 second. And what will I do? Vayrishenu. And I will destroy them. Ve'esa oischa l'goy gadol. And I will make you into a great, so to speak, nation. Ve'otsu mimenu, more powerful than them. In other words, Hashem says to Moshe, forget about the people. I will start a new nation from you. You will be the beginning of a new nation. Okay. This is pretty big. Hashem is really angry. He really wants to destroy the Jewish people in 1 second now. It's interesting what happened all of a sudden, because by the Chet HaEgel, you didn't see that reaction, right? It wasn't like an instant, you know, I'm going to do. But let's see how Moshe now, we're going to go into it, but I just want to show you, just let's do Rashi. Then we'll go more in depth after. It's easy, better for me. So let's say Vayrishenu, and I will, okay, so Vayrishenu means to drive away, it's to destroy. Okay, so now what does Moshe do? This is interesting. How could Moshe defend them? What good could he find in them now? I mean, here we have the most ungrateful bunch of people who have just witnessed the most amazing miracles from Hashem. And they're just outright acting as if, not just that they're ungrateful, but they don't trust in Hashem. They don't believe that and they don't want to do what he's asking them. What's Moshe going to say in their defense? So let's see what happens in Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayomer Moshe Hashem. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, Vishamu Mitzrayim. This is his defense. The Egyptians will hear. Ki he'elisa b'kaychacha es hamazeh mikirbay. That you brought, he from whose midst you brought up this nation with your power. This is like a middle of a sentence, so let's continue to the next pasuk. So what? So what if the Egyptians hear? What's the problem? Va'amru el yoshev ha'aretz hazais. And they will say about the inhabitants of this land, Ki ata Hashem bekerev ha'am hazeh, that Hashem, you are in the midst of these people. Asher ay, it's a long-winded sentence, but he's saying to, this is what the Egyptians will, so to speak, say, that there are inhabitants of the Eretz Canaan, and we know how Hashem has treated the Jewish people, that you are ayin ba'ayin nira, that you are eye to eye, you appear to them, va'ananecha oymed aleihem, and your cloud is on top of them. In other words, you're constantly protecting them. Uba'amud onan atoheilech lefneihem, right? And in a pillar of cloud you go before them during the day. Uba'amud eish laila, and in a fire at night. In other words, the contrast. You, Hashem, love, what the Egyptians only know up until now is that you love your people. You are with them, you take care of them, you provide for them, and you love them. And now they're about to enter the land you promised. So what will the Egyptians say? They will say, "Vehimata es hamazek ishechad." And if you were to destroy, to put to death these people like a single man, the Egyptians will say, "Ve'amru hagoyim asher shamu es shimacha leimar." The goyim who hear this news will say, "What will they say?" Mi bilti yechayles Hashem. That the reason Hashem is not bringing them into the land, the reason he destroyed them, even though we saw how much love he has for them, is only because he can't. He lacks the ability to bring them into the land that he promised, therefore he destroyed them in the desert. You see Moshe's argument? He has no defense for the Jewish people. What's his argument in two words? The argument of what we call Chilul Hashem. That's all. Hashem's honor. Nothing to do with the people. The people don't deserve anything. They deserve to be destroyed. You're right. They are beyond. There's nothing, no redeeming factor almost. Nothing I can find for them. But what will happen if you do destroy them, especially if you destroy them so quickly? So the Egyptians, he highlights the Egyptians, but then he says all the nations around will say, "Oh, I know why God destroyed them, because he can't." How many kings are there in Eretz Canaan? 31. Egypt, only one. One king he was able to go against. But 31 kings, too much for God. So now Hashem is in a pickle. He has no choice. He can't fulfill his promise, so he destroys them. That's what Moshe says to Hashem. So don't destroy them. Interesting. This is it's so sad in a way to realize that this is the defense that Moshe has to find now for the Jewish people. This is a really low point, obviously, as we can see. I want to just see if there's any Rashi here that we missed. Let's just go back. I want to show you. Just let's see the Rashi on Rashi Yudalid. And it starts, let me just see. You know, the truth is most of it we've just said as we read the Psukim, but if you look on page 162 in the Rashi, we'll just read in the middle, and it says, "Umayoymru aleyem," and what would they say about them? Masha Amr b'seif ha'inyan, that which is stated at the end of the topic, "Mi bilti yechayles Hashem," because Hashem lacked the ability. Why? Because they heard that you, Hashem, who dwells in their midst, and you appear to them eye to eye in a loving manner. That's, see, Rashi adds that that's how we understand what eye to eye means. V'hakol b'derechiba, everything is done in a loving manner. V'loi hikiru b'cha, and the Egyptians have not become aware regarding you. That what? Shenitka havasecha mehem. That they did something wrong and your love is not really there. They don't know that. They don't know what the Jewish people just did. That part is not public. So what will they think? You didn't have the strength to bring them in. Uh-oh, Hashem is in a pickle, right? So now Hashem, what's he going to do? Okay, so let's see how he says. And therefore you destroy them. Let me just see. And that's what we said, because they say, oh, Parah, he could do miracles, one king. But 31 kings, that's too much. Okay, let's see now to go on, and then we'll come back to Zion. We read to Zion, and let's see Pasuk Yud Zion. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't stop there, but because it's not enough. Obviously, this still needs a little more. So Moshe in Pasuk Yud Zayin, which is on page 163, says, "V'ata yigdal na koyach Adonai." So now, he says, interesting, "May now the strength of Hashem be magnified, ka'asher dibarta lemar, as you have spoken, saying." Very interesting. Very, very interesting. It's still Moshe Rabbeinu is talking. He's saying to Hashem something fascinating. He's saying, if you destroy them, your strength is diminished. Because people will think you have no strength. That's why you have to destroy them. But if you don't destroy them, your strength will be magnified. And why does he mention strength being magnified? What does that mean? And what does it mean, like you have spoken? Who has spoken? Moshe is obviously quoting something back to Hashem that Hashem told him. And we have to understand what that is. You know, sometimes when we speak to somebody who's upset, we say to them, "But you told us when you were calm, such and such and such." And therefore, keep your word or remember. So let's see, what is Moshe reminding Hashem of? This is a very beautiful Rashi. So look in Rashi Yud Zayin. Ka'asher dibar talemer. Umahu adibur. And what is the speaking to Moshe, which Moshe refers? So he's referring to something that happened at the time of the sin of the golden calf. So this is Rashi 17, right? On page 163 on the bottom. Hashem erech apayim. Hashem is slow to anger. La tzadikim v'la rishayim. So when Hashem, at the golden calf, Hashem said, Hashem was teaching Moshe Rabbeinu. Do you remember he taught him then the 13 Midais Harachamim, the 13 attributes of mercy. Boy, we use it on Yom Kippur nonstop, right? It's very powerful. And what did Hashem say? Hashem said, I am slow to anger. To who? Both righteous and wicked. Now, Kisha'Allah, Moshe Lamarim, when Moshe ascended up above to heaven, Matzah LaKadosh Baruch Hu, he found Hashem, that he was sitting and writing. And what was he writing? Hashem Erech Apayim, Hashem is slow to anger. So Moshe Rabbeinu thought immediately, what does it mean Hashem is slow to anger? Who is Hashem slow to anger at? Righteous people. Righteous people he doesn't get angry at. But if somebody does something wrong, well, then Hashem will get angry, right? That makes sense. So he says, La tzadikim, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, obviously you mean you're slow to anger to tzadikim. What does Hashem respond then? Amar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says to him, no, I don't just mean for tzadikim, even for rishayim, even for the wicked people. And at that point, Moshe couldn't understand. Interesting. But now what happens? He says like this. Moshe actually even says, Rishayim yoveidu, let the wicked perish. He doesn't understand what Hashem means. Why should you be slow to anger if somebody's wicked? Let the wicked perish. But now, Amar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu, before now. So Hashem responds to Moshe, then he says, Chayecha, I swear by your life, Shetitztarech l'davar. You're going to need this once. You're going to see. You're going to want to know about this information that I'm slow to anger, even to people who are wicked. Okay. And Kishechatu Yisrael, when the Jewish people sinned Ba'egel. Okay, so sorry, this was before the Chet Egel. That's why it makes sense. This is when Moshe Rabbeinu goes up on Har Sinai after Matan Torah, right, just before Chet Egel, right? He sees Hashem writing out the whole Torah and he sees these words and he can't understand why would Hashem be slow to anger against wicked people. At that point, the Jewish people were still very righteous people and he didn't even understand. I mean, it doesn't even make sense. It's true. It's not logical. But when the Jewish people sinned Takeh by the Egel and by the Meraglim, so he uses it twice over here and by the Egel, Hispalel Moshe Lefanav Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu davens before Hashem, and he uses those powerful words. And he says back to Hashem, you said, Erech Apayim, you are slow to anger. So Amar Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem said to him, V'haloya Martali, didn't you say to me that it should be only for tzaddikim? So Moshe Rabbeinu says, you're right, but you said to me that it's also for Rishayim. It's an interesting conversation. But we find something quite magnificent, that it's a process, that you see something beautiful here, that Moshe doesn't understand it until he's going through the experience. I'll tell you what I think it's like. It's like when you see somebody who's a new parent, right, and they have a new baby, their first baby. New parents think that their children will be perfect, and then they go somewhere else and they see this child that's talking not nicely to the parents or misbehaving in a certain way, and they probably don't say it, but they think it, bad parenting, or my child will never be that way. But then as children grow up and as things in life unfolds and you start experiencing things and everybody goes through different things and everybody, and then you start to understand it's not so simple. Life is not clear. Life is not just one single line. There's lots of bumps along the road. That's how Moshe Rabbeinu, he's understanding now what Hashem is telling him. But the beauty of it is that not only does he understand it, but he feels it so strongly because he feels he wants to defend. If you think about what's happening here, Moshe had the choice that he could have said, no problem, wipe them off. And he could have been the father of a new nation. He wasn't going to be destroyed. It wasn't going to affect him personally. It's amazing if you think about it. But rather, no, that doesn't work for Moshe Rabbeinu. By the Cheta Egel, he puts his whole life on the line. But over here, he begs Hashem, and Hashem listens, obviously, after. But he uses the words that Hashem promised him, and now he says, now I understand. Now I'm a more experienced father, and I know what it means that there's bumps along the road. Please be slow to anger. And therefore, Hashem says, that's why he says to Hashem, listen to your words. These are your words. Erech HaPayim. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu quotes. And that's why, if you look into Pasuk Yud Ches, he doesn't repeat all 13 attributes. We're going to see soon why. He highlights a few. Which ones does he highlight? So if you look on page 164, he highlights Hashem, God, who is merciful, right? Erech HaPayim, slow to anger. V'rav Chesed, who is abundant in kindness. Naisei Avayin Vafesha, he forgives iniquity and willful sin. V'nakei, v'loyenake, he absolves, but he doesn't absolve, as we say, which means if you don't do tshuva, he doesn't. Paiket Avayin Avayis Albonim, he recalls, in other words, he remembers the sins of the parents to the children, al shileshim v'al ribeyim, for a third and a fourth generation. These are the ones, six of them, or seven of them, but he's missing a few, and in a minute I'm going to tell you why he's missing, the ones he's missing. We'll go back, because I just want to read a little more what Moshe Rabbeinu says. Solach no la'avayin ha'am hazeh, forgive now the iniquity of this people, ki goydel chasdecha, to the greatness of your kindness, ka'ashem, as you have forgiven this people, Mimitzrayim va'adheina, from Egypt till now. You've already forgiven them quite a few times. Why should this time be any different? Forgive them. Vayomer Hashem, salachti kidvarecha. But we'll see in a minute. This is a bit more qualified than the one by the Egel. Hashem says, I forgive them as your word. But what does this forgiveness entail? Just remember, what happens to these people? Do they go into the land of Israel? No. They all die. But they don't die instantly. So you see, this is an interesting one. They're not forgiven totally. You realize the punishment is not totally removed. It's just a slower punishment. It's much slower. It means they all live to the age of 60, at least not to the age of 20 or 30, right? So it's much slower, but still, it's still going to happen. So there's something interesting here. You see how Moshe Rabbeinu's argument was? Don't kill them at once, because that's going to make the Chilul Hashem. So Hashem says, that part I listen to. But I'm not going to listen to removing it totally. Why? Because they've done too much already. But before we go further, I just want to go inside on your next booklet that you have in front of you. Show you which page. I should have numbered the pages. But I want to show you where it explains why we're dafka highlighting these specific ones of the 13 attributes of mercy. So it says page Kuf Samach Vav on the top. I don't know what page in your booklet it is. It's the fifth or the sixth page, maybe. I'm not sure. Let me see if I can count. One. Yeah, go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I think. Kuf Samach Vav on top. Does that make sense? And it says on the bottom of the page, it says, Hashem Erech HaPayim V'Rav Chesed. So, yeah, you see that, these psukim? No, with these sheets over here. You don't have it, Sylvia, by you. There's another booklet in front, I think, on the, is there, Daisy? Yeah, the third last. Sorry, because there's two booklets. For Sylvia, she wants to thank you. Sorry. Sorry, too small. These are, for me, even too small. Let's see. Okay, let's see on the bottom. He says, V'yesh oimrim, zesh amar ha-kosov li'il, v'heimasa es hamazeh. We might say that, this that it says in the pasuk before, that you will destroy, that this whole nation will die like one person. She'im tareg oisam, if you will kill them, yoimru ha-goyim sh'ato ki'ish echad. So it's before we get to the Erech HaPayim, a very beautiful thing. It says like this, the Pasuk says that if you will kill them, then what will the Goyim say? The Goyim will say you are like one man. What does that mean, like one man? Chas v'shalom. K'shem shebosar v'adam eina yaideya masha osed li'ira. Just like a person of flesh and blood, he doesn't know what the future brings. They will say God is the same way. He doesn't know the future. Why? She'im ha'yisa yedei yashem asidim lachtai v'tarei goysam lo ya'yisa oysa lehem eskola niflo yisa elu. The Egyptians will say, If God would have known the future, right, and he would have known that these people were going to do such terrible sins and he's going to kill them all, well, he wouldn't have done all those miracles in Egypt. Why waste all those miracles on a people that are going to be gone in a year from now? So that's one of the things Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, don't destroy them now, because that's what the Egyptians will think. Another thing they will think, that you are like a man of flesh and blood, like, in other words, that you are not an all-powerful God. Why? He says, this is a very important one. Moshe Rabbeinu says, what will other people think? Other people will think, just like a king of flesh and blood cannot conquer his anger, in other words, cannot control himself, as we human beings can't when we get upset. He says, they'll say, oh, you couldn't control your anger. You couldn't be patient. That's why you destroyed them. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu says, this is the opposite of what you are. You stand for compassion. You do have the ability to control your anger, so to speak. You are in control of what you do. That's why I ask you now, Yigdal na koyach Hashem, that your strength should be great. Achshav tira koychacha, now they will see your strength. Bazesha timchalem, when you actually forgive them. But going on to the next page, ha'avayin, and then the more you forgive them, kach yigdol koychacha bazeh, that's how much your strength will be greater. People will respect you even more. And that's what he said. That's what we say also in davening, on Musaf, on Yom Kippur, we say, from the patience that Hashem shows and doesn't get angry even though we have sinned, that's how we know how great Hashem is. So in other words, it makes you greater if you don't react and respond immediately. And also, as we know, a king of flesh and blood can be afraid. Why would he destroy somebody right away? Because he's afraid that the person might run away to somewhere where he, like, you know how people say, they jump bail and they'll run to another country and they don't have jurisdiction. But Hashem, you run the whole world. What are you afraid of? You can take your time in punishing them. They'll never escape your punishment. So why are you rushing? All these things Moshe tells Hashem to show Hashem, just to hold off and not to destroy the people. Fascinating ways. But let's understand why these. So if you look at the next verse, it's page Kuf Samach Zayin on top, and it says, Umishalish Esfrim Midas Harachamim, from the 13 attributes of mercy, which as we know are Hashem, Kel Racham, V'chanan, right? That Hashem is a compassionate God, and he's slow to anger, but he also has an abundance of kindness. And the word MS, that's not mentioned here, right? And the word also compassion is not mentioned. And also, which other one is it mentioned? And the sin of the inadvertent sin. So Moshe Rabbeinu only mentions 6. And let's see, he skips out 7. And we have to understand why. Because obviously those 7 don't apply here. Why don't they apply here? This sin was quite bad. And let's understand what's missing here and why he can't use those 7 to defend the people. So if you look, I'll just read from the 4th line on this paragraph. Hashem kel rachum chanon emes noitzer chesed la'alofim v'chata. Those are the ones he missed. Let's see. Okay, we'll go into each one. Lefisha oisen sheva midais loy hoyu ma'ilas loy bitfilosoy she'espalel. They wouldn't count, they wouldn't help him in his davening. The kol kach lama, why? Okay, so let's see. Ki mida achas shel Hashem peirusha shehakadosh baruch hu rachaman v'seileach lachtai hashav b'tshuva. Okay, one of the names of Hashem, we say Hashem, Hashem. Why? Because Hashem before you do tshuva, and Hashem after you do tshuva, right? Hashem forgives you, which actually beautifully means that just like Hashem loved you before you sinned, even after you do tshuva, a person might feel, so I've done tshuva, but you know how if you hurt a person, you insulted somebody or you hurt them, even when you beg forgiveness, they might forgive you, but there's still a drop of resentment. They can't forget it totally, but Hashem is different. Right, we say that the same way Hashem treated us before we sinned, he treats us after we sinned. It's totally erased. But over here, Moshe Rabbeinu can't use that. Why? They didn't do tshuva. Do you see any regret? They're standing firm, right? They're standing firm, ready. What they want to do? They want to stone Moshe. They want to stone Yeshua and Kalev. There's no tshuva happening. That's part of the problem. That's what makes this defense very, very difficult. You realize, well, it's an incredible thing to think, the position Moshe's in. By the Egel, there was more tshuva happening. Here, there wasn't. This is a problem, big problem. So he can't use that name of Hashem. That's one thing that's missing. Let's see the next thing that's missing. He says also, V'ilu kan lo yasu Yisrael tshuva, right? And then he says, Umidas keil, shehi midas hadin. The midah of Kael, which means the midah of judgment, she'enei seileach, that he doesn't forgive, loy, doesn't forgive, well, what we mean is he doesn't forgive unless you deserve, loy ha'ila, ma'isha ba'isha shah, sharei lefi amidah azaz ha'yitzarech l'chaloysam, v'loy l'chsleich lem klal. He can't bring that because they deserve nothing. As we see, they didn't do tshuva, they're not regretting, they're outright rebelling, so they should be totally destroyed. So he's not mentioning judgment, the idiot doesn't want any sense of judgment here. He wants that far away. He doesn't want judgment here. And then he says, he doesn't mention compassion, right? He doesn't mention mercy and grace. They wouldn't have helped. Shadayin Amdu bimirdam, they were standing in their rebellion. They didn't want to do tshuva. Not only didn't they do tshuva, they didn't want to do tshuva. So where's the? How could you have compassion? Compassion is on when somebody looks a little bit broken, you know. So you feel compassion. They're not broken at all. They're standing firm in their stubbornness, in their rebellion. So he can't bring those words. And then we have an interesting one. He can't bring the word emes. Shelefi midazu hayatzarech l'chaloysam. He should have destroyed them if it was truth. V'loy hayayachal asayis lefnim mishares adin. He can't do what is not judgment. He can't do, extend the judgment, so to speak, and say, I'll overlook. Because truth, they should be destroyed. V'chein loy hiskeres midas noitzer chesed la'alofim. This is interesting. Noitzer chesed la'alofim means that Hashem actually... when he talks about visiting iniquity on the children, he says for the third generation and the fourth generation. But when it comes to kindness and goodness, you know, if you do something good, you actually bring protection for 2,000, right? It says generations. It's like so much better. Good extends much more than bad. Which means, what does Neitzer Chesed La'alafim mean? Whose kindness are we banking on at the time when we say Noitzer Chesed La'alafim? We're going back to the time of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, right? Well, maybe we don't deserve, but remember our great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents. They definitely deserve. Avraham went through 10 tests. He for sure deserves. But why can't Moshe Rabbeinu bring the Schus Avos here? This is such an incredible thing that makes Moshe... This is what shows us how hard it was for Moshe. It's actually amazing. What did Hashem do for Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? What was one of the big... You know, when we read these parshiyos, it's like repeated and repeated and repeated. Which promise? What's the biggest promise he gives them? That he's going to give their children the land of Israel, right? The land of Israel. And what do we know about Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov? They loved the land of Israel. Avraham, I mean, he was so excited. He left his country. He came, as in this parsha, Lech Lecha. He leaves everything behind just so that he can go into the land. With Yitzchak, he never leaves Eretz Israel. Yaakov, when he leaves Eretz Israel, he is in so much pain. Remember, I don't know if you remember, it's incredible. It describes, Hashem had to sort of force him to go join Yosef in Egypt, right? He was like, he couldn't leave. So now, these people, the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, are outright rebelling. And what are they rebelling against? That they don't want to enter the land of Israel. How could he use the forefathers as a defense? It doesn't work. They're literally like throwing in their faces what they lived for. So Moshe can't mention them. So he can't even use that defense. It's quite incredible if you think about the harshness, so to speak, of the situation. What's amazing, though, is what he managed to accomplish. In other words, that he managed to accomplish that they didn't die, first of all, immediately, and rather they died slowly over the next 40 years. Not only that, but their children did enter the land of Israel. So you see that it's such an incredible, it's just amazing. You see the greatness of Moshe coming through so strongly in this story. And one of the big things it says, Moshe Rabbeinu said, I just want to see, if you look at the word Yigdal in the Pasuk, let me just see in the Pasuk that we had. Sorry, let's find my Pasuk. Oh, where am I? I just want to see something here, because he says, now you Hashem, be great, you know. Oh, it doesn't have it here. But in the Sefer Torah, the word Yigdal, which means strength, the Yud is big. There's a big Yud. Why? Because what does Hashem say? Moshe, this is part of the defense. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, it's interesting. First of all, there's a problem. It says, today I have to just finish 5 minutes early, but it's just here's something interesting with you. One of the things it says is that Hashem was really, really upset now, because it says that they actually, as we say, reached up to here. What does that mean? They actually did already said, Hashem said, they've already angered me 10 times in the desert. Like, this is the 10th time that they're angering me. It's interesting where the 10 times are. I'll read it to you soon, but fascinating thing, it says like this. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, even if they angered you 10 times, it's connected to this week's parasha, parasha's Lech Lecha, forgive them, because Avraham withstood 10 tests. And Avram withstanding 10 tests should mitigate the 10 times that his great-grandchildren anger you. Very interesting what he had to bank on. But he still couldn't bring them in, so to speak, to say defend in the merit of the forefathers, because these people are literally throwing in the faces exactly what Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov lived for. Quite powerful, quite strong words here. Just want to see... less. Yes, I know. Isn't it amazing? It's fascinating to see when you see the psukim of how it's different. Good morning, Elna. Elna's on. So nice to see you. But I just want to see one thing and one more beautiful concept that he says that, another interesting defense that Moshe Rabbeinu uses, the logic. He says to Hashem, listen, if you're going to destroy them all at once, what are you going to gain? They're going to be destroyed, nothing. So he compares it to something interesting. Let's just say you have a friend. Well, they might have been a past friend. You trusted them and you lent them money. And then they default on the loan. They say, I can't pay back. So it's a problem. They owe you money. So what could you do? So you have two things you can do. Either you can have them thrown in jail, you know, like in whatever, or you can have everything taken away from them, right? Because perhaps, you know, they didn't pay back, and therefore you can take everything away. Or you can do something else. You can sit down with them and negotiate and say, okay, you can't pay back now. It's true you've lost everything, but let's make a payment plan. And let's say that you can pay me back very, very slowly over many, many years. It's not ideal. It's not what we made up. But what's the benefit of that? The benefit of that is that if you take only a little bit from the other person at a time, you're helping them in that, first of all, they won't starve because they'll still have something. But more than that, perhaps they can use their resources now to rebuild. And then they will be able to repay you, right? So a kindness, a compassion would be, and it's actually beneficial even for you, but for sure for them, is if you do it piecemeal, slowly. And this is what Hashem said, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, don't punish the Jewish people now. Allow them to live for 40 years in the desert. Why? Because we know what happens to the Jewish people while they are in the desert. What do they do? That's right. So they do tshuva. Okay, that's what ends up happening. For this reaction that they had, okay, so the bad people actually died, okay, fine, but, I mean, the really rotten ones, right, the ones who were the instigators. But the other people who were schlepped along, as we said, everybody was schlepped along, now had 40 years where they were able to refine themselves and to better themselves and to improve themselves and to eat the mon, which gave them the biggest thing that they were lacking, which was that bitachon, right? That sense of trust in Hashem, which is why they sinned to begin with. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu says, it's much more worthwhile for you. Don't kill them in 1 second. Give them time to rebuild themselves spiritually. Then they will reconnect with you and everybody will gain. You will gain and they will gain. It's quite a powerful thing. The other fascinating thing is we said that when Hashem was approaching Moshe, what did he say to him? I'll make a new nation, you know, out of you, right? So what was the idea of that? What was the logic? So interesting, because we mentioned the forefathers. There's one problem that Hashem has and that Moshe Rabbeinu points out to Hashem. He says, you want to destroy these people, but you promised Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov that you will take their children into the land of Israel, right? How could you go back on your promise, right? You promised. Right? So Hashem says to Moshe, no problem. You're also from Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So I'll rebuild the nation from you. So I'll be still keeping my promise. You see, Hashem is like, has it all thought out in a way, like, it's not a problem. I'm not going against my promise. But that's when Moshe Rabbeinu tries to beg Hashem and say that's true. He has to admit that it's true, that that is an option, but it's not an ideal option. And the preferred way would be for the people to have an opportunity to grow spiritually, reconnect, give them that time, and don't cause a chilul Hashem, as we see. So all these different arguments together give the strength to Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, to cause Hashem afterwards. We'll see, obviously, he does react, and he says, okay, I won't, as he says, Solachti kidvarecha, I will not outright destroy them, rather, I will have a little bit of patience. But one thing you do see, and I feel bad, we'll just have to do the last few psukim from here next week, but just one interesting thing is at the end we read that before, when Hashem says, okay, I forgive them, but then Hashem says, make a detour, right? Because now they're going to have to go through the desert for 40 years. And he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, you should worry because Amalek is there. You know, we mention Amalek, they get scared. Why does he mention Amalek? Because Hashem says, even though I'm not going to destroy them now, they are not worthy of a miracle. So they're not worthy of facing Amalek and me saving them. You better take them quickly a different route so they don't face any danger and don't need special protection, because they really don't deserve special protection now. So you see very interesting how this is a limited forgiveness, very limited. And even though it is limited, but it still has a tremendous power, but it is a limited one. So it's quite an interesting, quite a fascinating thing.
I understand. You know,